from his studios in New York. It's time for Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora, where sports meets life. Here's your host, Dan Tortora.
Welcome here to Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora inside of Saltine Warrior Sports Pub on a beautiful no snow day. This is probably maybe the last beautiful day that we will have that is this warm, this sunny, and this great until maybe tomorrow. March. It's, you think tomorrow? Tomorrow's
no.
Supposed to be, okay.
Supposed to snow tomorrow.
We're supposed to snow what, tomorrow night into Monday?
Yes.
Is this what it is? So that voice that you just heard is not my conscience. Could be, but it's Rob Drummond. So Rob here with me. Fly Eagles fly, Rob.
Yeah.
Fly Eagles fly. So we'll discuss that in a moment. But Dan Tortora here with Rob Drummond inside of Saltine Warrior Sports Pub, 214 West Water Street in Syracuse, New York, and right next to where the tree will be up right after Thanksgiving. People will be skating there. They come over to Saltine Warrior, warm up and hang out, and obviously come out here pre-game, post-game, and during the game. If you're not watching the game at home or at the Dome, then obviously come out to Saltine Warrior Sports Pub on 214 West Water Street. You and I had a bet that I lost because I should have gone with the Cowboys, but I went with the Jaguars, and I said if you lost, you had to sing the Jaguars anthem, and if I lost, I had to sing the Eagles anthem.
So. That wasn't a bet. That was a given, but you decided you wanted to make the bet, so I agree with you.
Rob, I don't care what you say.
Okay. But,
so here is... So what is the actual, is it E-A-G-L-E-S, Eagles?
Yes, it
that's
is.
That's what it is? That's all I have to say.
That's all they say.
That's literally all I have to do. Just go, E-A-G-L-E-S, Eagles, that's it. I'm done.
No, it's Eagles!
Eagles! I feel like a terrible person.
Well, you're going to need to say that roar.
See, would you rather say Eagles, or would you rather go,
yeah, wow, what are they roaring for? There's no bite in that team at all.
That's so messed up.
They're not good.
Let me ask you a question, though. Jaguars-wise, is it the coaching or is it the players? I don't think it's the players.
It's the coaching.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the coaching.
I don't think it's the players.
No, it's the coaching.
Blake Bortles is a good quarterback.
Very good quarterback.
Right? Chris Ivory, pretty good running back.
Very good running back.
T.J. Yeldon, good running back, catching the ball out of the backfield.
Very,
right?
Very talented.
Allen Robinson, Marquise Lee. We're talking about Penn State, USC guys.
Very talented guys.
Julius Thomas.
It's coaching.
Miles Jack on the defense.
If Bill Belichick was at that team, that'd be a playoff caliber, top tier team. But Belichick's not there. Belichick's with the Patriots. Takes a good coach to bring a turn the program around.
Maybe Belichick could send me some of the film that he's taped from the teams that the Jaguars are playing, and then we can.
He wins. No, I don't like the Patriots. Cheating or not, he wins.
They do win.
Because trust me, they all cheat in the NFL.
Let me ask you this, though. There's four teams that I said within the past week, four teams I don't want to play. I said this, I said this on Monday. I can't believe I was in Florida on Monday. So, long week. So, on Monday's broadcast that I did from St. Augustine, I said there's four teams I would not want to play in the NFL right now. I'm going to ask you your four, and then I'll name my four again because you haven't heard it yet, but your four that you wouldn't want to play.
I'd say the Patriots, the Cowboys, the Patriots, the Cowboys, Seattle's getting healthy right now.
Mm-hmm.
And
I got two on one side, two on the other.
Let's see if I can go with another AFC team.
I want to see if we have the same. Lo mismo.
I'd say Denver because of that defense, but Denver can't score points, so they're not really going to threaten you on points. But if I had to go with a defensive team, and I always say defense win championships, I'd say Denver because of their defense.
Okay. Three out of four, we were the same. We were in the same division for the last one. I said the four teams I would not want to play in the NFL right now, if I was any of the other teams, any of the other 28, I would not want to play Seattle. I would not want to play, because offensively they're scoring now.
Yes.
I would not want to play, and Procise is getting better, and Rawls is back, hopefully. I would not want to play Dallas, and I would not want to play New England. I also said the team that I would not want to play of the AFC, I was in the same division as you, but this team can score points offensively. They can find a way to win without their
Raiders.
Quarterback. Without two of their running backs, three of their running backs, without their tight end that got ejected from a game at one point. this is a team that figured out the Jets when the Jets were in their first 3 weeks playing well. They figured out the Jets offense.
The who?
The Jets.
Yeah, okay.
When they started their first couple weeks, so they were scoring. They figured them out, and after that it was done. This team has a really good defense, and they won a lot of games this year. That's Kansas City. I wouldn't want to play Kansas City.
I like Andy Reid as a coach.
Yeah, I would not want to play Kansas City right now.
The only reason I say Dallas is because Dallas is finding a way to win right now.
You mean Denver?
Or no, I mean the Cowboys, when you say the Cowboys, because I say Dallas for the simple fact that they're finding a way to win right now. But Dallas is not a dominant team. Dallas is not going out there beating teams by 2, 3, 4 touchdowns. Dallas is barely winning the game. The Eagles were up in that game by 10 points going into the final quarter. You know? Yeah. So it wasn't a dominant effort. It wasn't a dominant effort against anybody they played so far this year.
But it's how you close, right?
But you know what?
Because Seattle closed on New England.
They're finding a way to win, which makes a good team. But you're right, eventually that's going to catch up to them. You know, they're not finishing teams off. And that's what it takes to be a championship team. Yes, they have the best record in the NFL right now, and they're doing a great job. But they're not dominating teams. They're barely winning, and they're beating teams at the skin of their teeth, which makes for a good team, which gives them a great record. But it'll be interesting to see them in the second half of the season.
Who is the MVP of the league? If it came from the Cowboys, who would it be?
Ezekiel Elliott. I definitely give it a...
Why Ezekiel, not Dak?
Ezekiel Elliott, it's great what Dak Prescott is doing right now, but you take that running game away from the Cowboys, and Dak Prescott's not able to do what he needs to do. Right now, people are having to stack the box because of that good offensive line and what Ezekiel Elliott is doing rushing. He's about to shatter the season rushing rookie record for a Dallas Cowboys running back, and that's pretty prevalent. Right now, Emmitt Smith has that, and that's about to be broken with, you know, X amount of games still to be played. You know, right. So he's doing a great job where he's allowing Dak Prescott right now to play action pass. And guys, you know, you can't defend that. You know, the young man right now is having a great year, and he really makes the Cowboys go right now. Prescott's really just in there just being a game field moderator and a game field, you know, just field general right now. He's orchestrating everything, but you can put Tony Romo in that same position, and Tony Romo would be doing the exact same thing. You put another running back in Ezekiel Elliott's position, and he wouldn't be doing the same thing.
You look at Zeke, though, he's played in 9 games, right? So team plays 16 games in the regular season. You got 7 more games to go as a rookie. He's at 1,005 yards through 9 games. So if he does a little bit more than his average, and his average right now is 111.7 yards per game. If he goes a little better than his average, he could be a 2,000-yard rookie running back.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's amazing. I mean, it says a lot about the offensive line and the tight end and the blocking scheme they have there. That's a great offensive line, you know, and that's what it really takes to be a successful NFL franchise, you know, to have an offensive line.
Would you say that this Dallas offensive line is the best one they've had since Emmitt Smith's time?
Hands down. I mean, it was one of the best offensive line I think I've ever seen in the NFL.
And when you look at this, you know, you look at the Dallas Cowboys a few years ago being critiqued for drafting an offensive lineman out of Notre Dame so early in the draft. And why would you take somebody like that? Why would you take Zach? Why would you do that so early? And you look at it now and you say, well, this is why. And I've jokingly said this, but in all seriousness, I kind of mean it. If the Dallas Cowboys would allow me to be on the 53-man roster for a game and allow me one carry, then I could finally get my NFL touchdown.
Probably. That line's pretty doggone good, you know. So, my hat's off to him. Ezekiel Elliott, I won't say lucked up, but got into a great situation and allowed him to be in a position to be successful. I honestly think if the San Diego Chargers didn't take Bosa with the second overall pick in the draft, I think the Dallas Cowboys were going to take Bosa. So that's interesting to see how that fell out. You know, I kind of almost knew they were going to take a defensive end. They go bolster that defense, but you know, the San Diego Chargers ended up taking Bosa. The Cowboys, Ezekiel Elliott ended up falling into the Cowboys' lap. I don't know if falling is the word.
You got to remember, Jalen Ramsey was going to be the Cowboys' pick.
Yeah.
We thought it was either Jalen Ramsey or Ezekiel Elliott. And then that fell into the Jaguars' lap. So, you know, you look at kind of that situation where Dallas ended up with Zeke, a top five draft pick.
Yeah.
And when you're a top five draft pick, you have to play like a top five draft pick. And
in 5 out of 9 games this season. He has over 100 yards rushing. He has 9 touchdowns on the season rushing, 1 receiving. He has 3 fumbles, but he's lost only 1 of them. So you got 1 fumble that you lost, you got 9 touchdowns rushing, 1 touchdown receiving, and more than half the time you're getting over 100 yards behind that line. Because the first couple games looked a little bit suspect, right? He had 51 yards in the first game against the Giants, which was 2.6 yards per carry. Then he had 83 yards against Washington, which was 4 yards a carry, but he had a touchdown in both of those games. Zeke, to be where he was, you know, I'm watching this game, and I got back from Everbank Field with the Jaguars in Houston, and I got back to my aunt and uncle's house, and I was, first day out, I wanted to turn on the Cowboys-Steelers game, because to me, this is old Super Bowl, you know. So I want to turn this game on, and I'm not even paying attention to the game. We're eating dinner. I'm trying to be a good Italian child and eat my food and pay attention to my family, and my back is facing the game, and I just kind of look over my shoulder, and it was a 1-point game, and Antonio Brown had scored at this point. It was 29-23 or something like that. It was it was very, very close. And I said, okay, all right, you know, let me. It was 30-29. It was 30-29 because the Cowboys scored, made it 35-30. So it's 30-29. And I said, okay, let's see what they can do. Let's see if Dak can keep this alive. Because love Tony or hate him, criticize him or not, he's done these things. So I'm watching the game, and you see it, and I say, okay, all we need to get this pass. And Jason Witten catches the pass. I said, okay, you're good. You're in Dan Bailey field goal range. Dan Bailey is really, really good. So we're in good shape. So Ezekiel's going to run it up the gut. You're going to hope to gain a few yards, but you want to get to the middle of the field. And he hit that line and blew through that line, and it literally looked like a play was blown dead because there was nobody there. I mean, everybody was up there at the box. So to me, I mean, a 32-yard run when you think a field goal is coming. What can you say about Ezekiel Elliott then? You know, you get criticized these days for drafting anybody in the first round that's a running back, and even the early part of the second round. He's a top 5 pick, but damn it, he's a top 5 pick.
He's a very, very talented running back. You know, he finds a hole, he hits a hole with speed, he hits it with power, and he hits it with elusiveness. So he's a downhill runner, but he's very elusive, you know, but you don't see for a back his size, you know.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun to watch him and Dak Prescott, that young tandem, for the next couple of years with the Dallas Cowboys. I think the NFC East, as I was watching last week, every team in the NFC East won. You know, so that's fun to watch. You know, I'm not just a fan of a team. I'm a Philadelphia Eagles fan, but I'm also a fan of this game of football. You know, so yeah. It's fun to watch teams. And it's fun to watch divisions when divisions can dominate like that.
Well, it's fun to watch competition.
It is fun to watch competition. Competition brings out the best in anybody. And it's fun to watch those teams go back and forth.
You know, and Rob speaking on the NFC East. Wake up call of Dan Satora live from Celtine Warrior Sports Pub, 214 West Water Street in Syracuse, New York. Got some people out here at the bar right now hanging out, getting ready for this game. Florida State.
That's your family.
Syracuse. Yeah. That's my.
I know, I saw your mom.
That's my support. Yeah. I would hope your family came to your games like my family
comes to my
shows. Yeah. So Dallas is 8-1, Giants are 6-3, the Redskins are 5-3-1, and the Eagles are 5-4. And you look at some of the other so. To be the worst of 4 teams, the Eagles are 5-4. But you look at the NFC North, to be the worst team, the best team in the NFC North is 5-4.
Yeah.
The worst team in the NFC East is 5-4.
Yeah.
The best team in the NFC South is 6-4. After that, it's 4-5. And then in the NFC West, besides the Seahawks, second best team is 4-4-1. So if that doesn't say something about the NFC East and its competitiveness, which, you know, growing up and actually, you know, through my 13 years of broadcasting, I could say from 2008 on of broadcasting, for the most part, the toughest division or one of the 2 toughest divisions in the NFL was the NFC East. And in the last couple of years, that's kind of faded away a little bit, where Washington can win the division, which, you know, something's probably wrong.
Yeah.
But, you know, you look at the last couple of years have not been what you expect, but it's finally there. And obviously, Dallas is the giant shadow cast upon it, but it's not like the second best team is bad. There's 6 wins for the Giants.
Yes.
So, you know, I think everybody's looking at Dallas, but you got to understand, this NFC East is damn good right now. Finally, what it should be.
It's a very good division. You know, you have players like, you know, Odell Beckham, you know, you have Dez Bryant, you know, aging, you know, Redskins team, you know, but the Deshaun Jackson, who still, you know, can blow the top off of a defense, you know, and open up their coverage and stretch the field. So you have some very, very good, talented offenses, you know, and defenses of them, for that matter of fact, in the NFC East. The NFC East is finally getting back to that physical style of football that they played back in the days when I played, you know, in the 90s, you know. So it's going to be interesting to watch the rest of this year going into playoff time, how these teams do and how these teams shake themselves out.
And when we look at going from the NFL to the collegiate world, obviously we have to look at the ACC. And I want to make a note here about the ACC. They have four teams in the Atlantic Division, and they have 5 teams in the Coastal Division, which makes 9 of the 14 that are bowl eligible already. And I brought this up on my show on Wake Up Call with Dan Satora on the November 18th broadcast that featured the annoying moment of the week, so on and so forth. Georgia Tech, Pittsburgh, Miami, North Carolina, Virginia Tech of the Coastal, and then Louisville, Clemson, Florida State, and Wake Forest of the Atlantic are all bowl eligible. NC State's still alive. They got to win one more game of their 2. Syracuse has to win 2. Boston College has to win 2. Duke has to win 2. And Virginia's the only team out of it. So 13 of 14 teams going into their 11th game are still alive to become bowl eligible. It stands to reason that NC State will lock it up, and it stands to reason that maybe a team like Duke will, with Syracuse and Boston College being the teams that have to win some big games coming up. But Boston College can, you know, UConn is a winnable game because they're evenly matched, so they could be 5-6 coming out of this thing. And Syracuse has Florida State and Pittsburgh on the road. What can you say about the ACC this year, that there's 9 teams already bowl eligible, and Pittsburgh, mind you, and Virginia Tech has a new coach. Pittsburgh is in their second year of their new coach, and they haven't been in the ACC that long. And Wake Forest held on to Dave Clawson, who is in the Scott Schaefer realm of, do we just get rid of this guy and say, screw it? They kept him, as opposed to Schaefer at Syracuse, and his team's 6-4, and they're 4th behind Florida State, Clemson, and Louisville in the Atlantic Division. So, broad scope, what is the ACC this year? Is it what you thought it would be, or is it not?
It's very competitive. You know, it's nice to see a conference be able to put that many teams, or to have that many quality caliber teams being able to go to bowl games. You know, it bodes well for the future of the ACC for the simple fact that when you go to a bowl game, that gives you 14 to 15 extra days of practice. So it allows you to be able to go out there and give your team more rhythm, give your team more continuity, give your team more time to work and gel together as a unit going into the offseason. You know, teams that don't go to bowl games don't get those extra days of practice. It's so mandated in the NCAA right now, where teams coaches are not allowed to really have so much to have contact with their players. You know, you can't get them on practice field. Only thing you really can do is get them in the weight room and have them lift weights. But as far as practicing and things of that nature, they're not allowed to. The NCAA mandates what you can do. So it allows the coaches to be able to go out there and evaluate their talent, you know, to be able to bring in recruits and get guys who could be younger guys, but give them more opportunity, to give them more reps, to be able to go out there and practice and learn the system. Every coach that comes to any university or institution wants to implement his system. And when you get more time to work with your players, which is what the bowl game allows, it allows you to be able to implement your system and be able to put them in the right situation and have the right frame of mind to be able to go out there and execute what it is the coach is trying to do.
Let me ask you this question about college football, because it seems like it's flipped in the wrong direction. It's almost counterproductive, or is counterproductive. If you are bowl eligible and you make it to a bowl game, like you said, you got another month to practice, so to speak, right? You got more time. You end in November, your bowl game's at the end of December, January, you got another month to be with your team. That's for teams that are good enough to make a bowl. Don't you think the teams that need more practice are the ones that are not bowl eligible? So isn't it counterproductive to say, you did not make it to a bowl, so you cannot practice. I would think those are the teams that need to be together the most.
NCAA rules, you know. NCAA rules say if you get to a bowl game, you get 6 wins, you get rewarded by getting 6 more practices. You know, this is not a participation trophy society we live in.
But
know?
It seems like how do you make a team better if they're not getting more practices?
It's just like the NBA NFL lottery draft. You know what I mean? Like you can be the worst team in the league, but it doesn't matter. You get more balls than the other teams. You know, but you know,
almost never win.
It's still chances. You know, yeah. And the worst team usually never gets the first ball. The best player in the draft. So you know,
yeah.
We live by rules and regulations here. You know, and we have to abide by them.
Thank goodness that the Cleveland Browns don't have to abide by those rules, because they'll have the first pick. Who should Cleveland take? You and I talked about this on the phone, but we haven't discussed it on the air. Who should the Cleveland Browns, and I actually put this up, I put it up on social media. Follow me at Twitter at CallDT, that's CallDT. And we hit, for the last 28 days, we hit over 319,000 impressions on Twitter. No paid advertising, no pay to get people to follow. This is just people out of the goodness of their heart, over 300,000, so thank you. And I asked a question, who should the Cleveland Browns take? And the answer was what I thought it would be. You know, people like the sexy pick is what. I don't like calling anything in sports sexy. It really annoys the heck out of me, but people associate with that. So I'm going to change. It's not the sexy, it's the flashy pick, so to speak, right? The running, the quarterback, the wide receiver. And that, so I put up, I thought of the four positions that Cleveland needs the most. So I said, who should Cleveland take? A wide receiver, a quarterback, a defensive lineman, or a linebacker? And quarterback and wide receiver were the ones that jumped out, right? But you and I have agreed that a linebacker or a defensive end is a better way to do it because they can't stop anybody from scoring. No matter what their lead is or what their advancement is, they can never stop another team. So let's argue that point, and then we'll play devil's advocate. Argue the point of defensive lineman or linebacker is a better choice for the Cleveland Browns at a number one pick.
I think it's a better choice for the simple fact that look at their history of taking quarterbacks, you know, over the past few years. You know, they traded, you know, for Robert Griffin III. You know, how'd that work out? You know, they drafted Johnny Manziel. How'd that work out? You know,
they should have known better.
Quarterback after quarterback, and it's just not working out for them.
Are you saying that Tim Couch wasn't a premier quarterback?
Is he still playing?
You know, Donovan McNabb was number two to Tim Couch.
You take a defensive dominant player, you know, and you can always build around him. You know, you can go out in free agency next year, you know, get a quality quarterback like a Tony Romo, say, you know, because he's going to be a backup the rest of this year. And, you know, Lord knows it. Next year he's not going to want to be a backup, but he's going to ask for a trade or want to be out of it because Tony Romo at the end of his career wants to play, and he's a quality quarterback. You know,
he's got two more years. He's kind of going to maybe Joe Montana this thing and leave San Fran and go to Kansas City.
He's not holding a clipboard after starting his entire career in Dallas. He's not holding a clipboard. So he's going to want to play somewhere, whether it be in Dallas, which I don't see happening with Dak Prescott there. He's going to want to play somewhere. So he's going to ask for a trade or to be released. So he'd be a perfect fit for a Cleveland team. You know, a veteran quarterback. They can draft a quarterback, you know, later in the draft. You know, why would you go after a first-round pick in the draft? Look at Dak Prescott. He was a fourth-round pick for the Cowboys. And look what he's turned out. Yeah. You can always get a quarterback who's smart and he's heading later on in the draft. You don't have to spend so much money.
Well, who are the two best quarterbacks record-wise right now in the NFL? Tom Brady, sixth round compensatory pick. Yeah. Dak Prescott, end of the fourth round.
Yeah, and look at the way, I mean, granted, the Eagles got lucky in a Carson Wentz, you know, but I mean, look at Jared Goff. It took Jared Goff finally to this week to finally end up starting. So you don't have to spend so much on a quarterback, you know, in order to be successful in the NFL. Start with your defensive player first because they're very much harder to find. Get a dominant defensive player and you'll be fine. You can always build around that.
I'm going to let you know the quarterbacks that are available, that are going to be available. This is not like if Tony Romo asked for a trade or whatever. These are the.
Oh, Tony Romo will be available next year.
Oh, yeah. But I'm saying these are free agents as of 2017. Kirk Cousins of Washington, Ryan Fitzpatrick of the Jets, Case Keenum of the Rams, Sean Hill is also going to be available of Minnesota, Matt Schaub of Atlanta, Matt McGloin of Oakland, E.J. Manuel of Buffalo, Blaine Gabbert of San Francisco. Well, so I missed an air. Matt Castle of Tennessee, Mark Sanchez of Dallas, Brian Hoyer of Chicago, Geno Smith of the Jets, Austin Davis of Denver, and the list goes so on and so forth. So, and Ryan Nassib is going to be available from the Giants as well. So, if I look at this list, I like Ryan Nassib to get an opportunity somewhere to be a backup potentially play. And Kirk Cousins, pretty good. Outside of that, it's kind of slim pickings.
I didn't hear Colin Kaepernick's name on there. I thought he'd be a free agent.
Colin Kaepernick will not. He will not be a free agent based on his current contract. But they could. They can obviously do whatever they want to do with Colin.
They're not paying him all that money.
No. And it'll be interesting to see running back wise. And we're gonna have to do a show about this, Rob, because we should do a show just about free agency.
Yeah, it's gonna be.
Because D'Angelo Williams is gonna be a free agent.
And Sean Jackson's gonna be a free agent.
Darren McFadden's gonna be a free agent. Danny Woodhead, LeGarrette Blount, Le'Veon Bell is gonna be a free agent as well. You expect him to re-sign. Eddie Lacy is gonna be a free agent. Tim Hightower, Bobby Rainey, Jacquizz Rodgers, who came on for Tampa, is gonna be a free agent. And is there anybody else? Latavius Murray will be a free agent as well.
He'll re-sign.
And then wide receiver wise, really quick here before we get back to Syracuse, I wanna make a note. Elshon Jeffrey will be a free agent. That'll be interesting to see because Chicago has a terrible offense. If I was him, I'd want to go anywhere else. Vincent Jackson's going to be a free agent. DeSean Jackson, Steve Smith, Anquan Boldin, Michael Floyd of Arizona. Who else we got? It'll be a free agent. Terrell Pryor with Cleveland, and he's shown that he could do some pretty nice things. So that would be a good one out there that people are going to spend some money on. Terrence Williams of Dallas could find himself another home, as well as Marcus Wheaton of Pittsburgh that hasn't gotten as many looks as others. Bryce Butler of Dallas will be a free agent as well that's come on for them as a possession receiver. So 2017 is going to be a big year, not even talking about trades. So we should do a show about that.
I'll definitely do a show about that. My Eagles need some good free agents. They need some weapons for that young man Carson Wentz to be able to go out there and perform.
Well, the NFC East seems to enjoy kind of sleeping in the bed of the other team, their adversary. So a Bryce Butler from Dallas, they could throw some money at. You know, DeSean Jackson, maybe a return. Who knows? Because you're under a new coach and whatnot. So it'll be interesting to see. You know, and it'd be funny because I would rather watch DeSean Jackson on Philadelphia than anywhere else because were his best days.
He's a game breaker. You know, yeah, I guess he can blow the top off of the defense and be that home run hitter. He makes plays.
Yeah.
He's always going to play back there that can make plays. He's a playmaker.
So we go and we talk about playmakers. One of those playmakers that is in the semifinalist group and they're going to be announcing on Monday, November 21st, where they're going to stand with the finalists. But for the semifinalist group, there's 10 that they have for wide receivers across the country for the Biletnikoff Award that is awarded to a former FSU player and Oakland Raider, Fred Biletnikoff. And Fred Biletnikoff, this award's going to the most outstanding receiver in the country. Ahmed Atalo is on the list. If you want to check him out, go to wakeupcalldt.com, click on Right Now, and look for the Biletnikoff Award article. I didn't write about each player. I gave a video of each player. Went to YouTube, so credit everybody that did that, but you can watch these guys. I don't know how you sit on a board and can judge who the best one is because they're all different and they're all really, really nice on film. But Ama Adetawo is in the top 10. Good, bad, or indifferent for Syracuse and how the season ends. What do you want to say about Amba to not only be the leading receptions in a single season for Syracuse, the leading receiving yards in a single season for Syracuse, but all the other receivers that did this were Syracuse receivers. They weren't graduate transfers. So what does it say about Amba?
No, what a great accomplishment for that young man, and what a humble young gentleman he is, you know, to be able to go out there and now be considered, you know, in the allure of the great receivers here in Syracuse, you know, the Scott Swadies, the Rob Moores, the Tommy Gaines, the Marvin Harrisons, you know, the Kevin Johnsons, you know, I can go on and on and on, you know, and the Art Monks, you know, but to have your name, you know, up there and to be able to even be spoken in the same sentence with those guys, it says a lot about who he is, it says a lot about what he did in 1 year, as you know, as a fifth year senior, pretty much, you know, and he did it with dignity. He did it it with pride, and he went out there and he had fun. So, you know, it's something that he can sit down, you know, years from now and be able to tell his kids, and tell his grandkids years later. But it's a great accomplishment now, and he can sit back, relax, and enjoy it.
You had Rob Moore as a wide receiver on your team. You know Rob. You know, obviously, of the likes of Quinn Spotwood and Kevin Johnson and Marvin Harrison and Kadri Ishmael and so on and so forth and Art Monk. Where does Amba stack up? I mean, we know single season-wise where he stacks up, but would you consider him in one season to be one of the greatest in Syracuse?
I can't, because one season is not enough. You know, anybody could be a one-year wonder, you know. Need to see his body of work, so I would need to see him for two or three or possibly 4 years. But what a great accomplishment in 1 year. I wish we had more time with him, but you know, for 1 year, this young man was magic. You know, but in order for me to be able to sit here and consider him one of the greatest in Syracuse, in the laurels of Syracuse University receivers, I need to see more time. You know, I need to see more than him in 1 year to just do it for me.
Now, speaking on Syracuse quick here before we close out, Florida State Syracuse going out at the Dome, last home game at the Dome for the Syracuse Orange. DeAndre Francois, or as some people like to call him, Francois, but Francois. So the Frenchman, he in his most recent game was up against Boston College, wreaked a little bit of havoc. Three touchdowns passing, and then Delvin Cook had a touchdown on the ground and 108 yards. Francois going to work as somebody who is in his first season leading this offense at the quarterback position, and they have Alden Tate, Travis Rudolph, Maven Saunders, Delvin Cook, running back, catching passes as well, Kermit Whitfield, and the list goes on and on and on and on. Ryan Izzo, who Syracuse recruited at the tight end position. Florida State's offense is not what it typically is. So I'm going to ask you this question. Is this offense good enough to blow out Syracuse like they have in the past? Or will this be a closer game in your opinion?
You know, it's interesting to say, because Syracuse is so young. I mean, I know last week they had out of the 11 possible starters on defense, 7 of them were freshmen and sophomores. You know, and barring injuries, and who's starting this week, it'll probably be the same. So Syracuse is getting a lot of experience, but Delvin Cook is one hell of a running back. You know what? And Francois, I mean, this offense, you know, are they capable? Is the Florida State team capable of blowing them out? Yes, they're capable of it. But you know, you look at all the upsets. You know, last week, you know, the Louisville loss. Yes, you know, Thursday night, you know, so anything is possible. You know, I'm always going to stick with my Orange, man. That's my team, true and blue. You know, I bleed orange, you know, so hopefully they can go out there and create one of those upsets like they did against Virginia Tech. But, you know, it's all the fault of the players and the coaches. So, I mean, I'm going to be rooting for them. I'll be at the game watching, you know, as I always do. But, you know, the ball's on the players and the coaches, so anything is possible.
I want to go to what the fans said really quick here, Rob. And the fans had made their case on Twitter. I put polls up every single week, so if you haven't voted in them, make sure you do. And that is at CallDT on Twitter. That's at CallDT. And I said, where will you be watching the game? And half the people said home, and half the people said at the Dome. So we'll see how the crowd shows up today. But this is where it stands right now. These are your choices. Vote now on the outcome of FSU at Syracuse. 38% said blowout by FSU, 13% said close win by FSU, and 49% said Syracuse victory. So there are people out there that are hopeful, and like you said, anything can happen in this game. But for Syracuse, it's Zach Mahoney. Yeah. And I think people need to realize this. Mahoney kept Syracuse close to Clemson last year, kept him close to LSU last year. But this is a fifth-string preferred walk-on that became a scholarship player this year. So you got to remember that. You got to remember that the running game hasn't been working because they haven't gone to it enough.
It hasn't been working. It's been dormant.
But they don't go to it. They don't go to it enough. And on top of that, the offensive linemen are young, inexperienced, and constantly moving due to injury. And you've lost two centers. So The center is one of the most understated but most important players on the team. He is the center of your line. He is the person that snaps the ball. So if his timing is off in any way, shape, or form, the entire offense, wide receiver, tight end, running back, it all falls apart, quarterback. So you got all of that going against you. And you have a secondary that's getting better but is still without Antoine Cordy. And you have a linebacker core that is obviously doing pretty well, but they're advancing. And the defensive line is filled with players whose faces weren't there last year against Florida State. So, with everything against Syracuse, what would you consider a win, even if it's not a win? Do they come within 14 and you go, you know what, that's pretty damn good for this team for what they have? I mean, how do you look at it?
You know, there's no moral victories in football, you know. But you go out there, you know, with this young team, you know, to get a win would be great, but to get the experience, because they're such a young team, it's going to be valuable for them going into Syracuse in the future. So all you need to do is just go out there, play hard, and understand that they can play with a top quality team, you know, throughout the country. They proved it against Virginia Tech, you know, they proved it last year playing games. Just go out there, you know, just play your best. Do what the coaches showed you what to do. Practice, you know, just go through your game plan and try and execute. And try and do the best you can. Limit your mistakes and let the chips fall where they fall. They win, great. If they lose, learn from it, they move on. You know what? It's not the end of the world, the loss.
Lastly, for you, Rob, what can you say about these last two games for Syracuse, win, lose, or draw, to be 4-6 overall and to be at this point 3-4 in the ACC? What is the focus for these next two games besides winning? What is the focus for Dino, and what are your thoughts on what he's done at this point?
You know, my focus may not be the last two games. The game experience, and go out there and give it your all. You know, you have two shots to become bowl eligible. You know, just go out there and play your best. You know, I can live with any guy. You can lose a game, but I can live with a player going out there and giving his best. You know what? You're not going to win every single game, you know, but you learn from that. And Coach Babers came in and he gave his team a mindset that they haven't had in a long time. I'm glad to see these young men go out there, you know, be able to pull four wins out of the season. Because a lot of people in the pundits had them only winning two games this year, you know. And they go out there and when they have four wins, they one win against a top 25 ranked team, says a lot for them going towards the future. And they have so many young players to be able to go out there and get the experience, you know, to be able to play in, you know, big time college football games and understand that they can go out there and compete with these guys, says a lot for this young team going into the future. So they're only going to get better, and it's going to be interesting to watch them going forward. And I think Coach Babers is the right coach with the right attitude and the right mindset to be able to carry these kids into the future and to be able to get them back to where Syracuse once was.
That coming from Rob Drummond, myself, Dan Tortora. Wake up call with Dan Tortora here with you in Salting Warrior Sports Pub, 214 West Water Street, Syracuse, New York. Get out to the game, enjoy the game, be blessed, be safe, be humble, and a very early happy Thanksgiving.
You also, Dan.